Slow internet should be a headache of the past, yet many Namibians have connections that just aren't fast. We have a solution that might set you free. It's called Mobile LTE, and it comes with real speed. You'll enjoy up to 50 megabytes per second from just $300 a month and free internet browsing after midnight till 6. When it comes to staying connected, this is it. Visit paratus.africa/Namibia or our branches nationwide and experience the thrill of better internet with Paratus by your side. Always Paratus.
All right. It's a good morning and welcome to Ram of the Historics. Welcome to Ram of the Historics. And of course, it's a program where we share a lot of geopolitical happening, a lot of interesting geopolitical, you know, changes. A lot of geopolitical changes that are shaping this world. And today we are looking at what happened recently, just recently. And, you know, Trump, of course, as usual, was playing the lecturer. It was Trump versus Ramaphosa. Trump playing the lecturer. And Ramaphosa playing the diplomat. So the lecturer and the diplomat meet in front of journalists. And they are going to see and investigate. So I'm not going to take long today with the intro, because I want to get right into it. But welcome to Realm of the Historics. And of course, just prepare yourself and let's have a conversation.
Thank you.
right, we come back. We come back. Now, Trump is not like any other president, you know. One of the most amazing remarks that Trump made, you know, it was a press conference. The president of South Africa was there, and I think he was surprised how he was calling the NBC journalist. He was calling him an idiot. He was calling him a jerk. So, and I think in as much as Trump was wrong for maybe calling a journalist these names, most journalists, if it was in Namibia, imagine me, the president Netumbo calls somebody from any media house those names. You could hear from Namibian media, you know, lashing out against the president that she's against, you know, she's crushing press freedom. But at the same time, journalists, we also need to learn to be in context. You know, as for the same time as journalists, because we will run and say that it's a violation of press freedom when somebody's called, there was a lady in March 2020, there was a SWAPO press conference where they were pronouncing themselves on the issues of fish rot. Now, this lady, instead of asking the question within the subject at hand, the person went to ask about abortion, whether Namibia, what the president will say on issues of abortion. Is he pro-abortion or anti-abortion, something like that. You see, and it prompted the president to be so aggressive against this journalist. So this is also how we embarrass ourselves as journalists, because we don't learn to be in context. You know, just address the subject at hand. And if you want any other queries, you can always come back the next time if it is a burning issue. And when you get embarrassed like that by the president, the whole America was watching this. So it's an embarrassment to a media house itself. And I would believe that media houses don't send people to go out of topic. But it's us journalists for trying to be, you know, wanting to shine, wanting to think that you want to be more relevant while you're embarrassing yourself. So this particular journalist embarrassed himself, and I think the president Ramaphosa was equally surprised that this is how the president would address a journalist. So, and Trump went to the point of asking, telling Ramaphosa, said, don't worry about these people like that jerk that is sitting there. They are known of making up false claims and coming to ask questions that are not in line with what is being discussed, just to disturb the flow. So, As a radio journalist, when I was listening to this, I was embarrassed. It's like, it's me that is being addressed. I was putting myself in that shoes. So how do you come back to, how do you come back? How do you pick yourself up and organize yourself? Well, that's not the subject of today. I'm just making an intro of one of the most dramatic scene or dramatic moments of the Trump Ramaphosa meeting. So, learn to ask questions. Get the subject and ask a question. There was a journalist again last year that made fun of himself. And he asked a question on the issue of, and it was an electoral act that he didn't understand. And he underestimated the person that to whom he was posing this question. And I think you know what I'm talking about. So these are the things where people just, you just jump and you want to challenge when you have not read and understood what you are challenging, the subject. It creates problem. So, now Trump wants to lecture Ramaphosa. But then Ramaphosa, he comes as a diplomat. He comes to the United States as a diplomat. And Trump wanted to think that he could lecture Ramaphosa the way he lectured Zelensky or the way he lectured Macron. Because Macron comes to America with that, you know, subtle audacity. You know, that kind of deserving mentality that he deserves to be listened to by the United States president. Because Macron is also a leader. He's also a great leader. He's a leader of a great country. So, in other words, Macron wants Trump to treat him as his equal, which Trump, which Trump end up not doing. He end up showing Macron that he's not his equal, at least not yet. So Zelensky goes to goes to America with that privilege, thinking that he's going to his grandfather because he got used to be pampered by Biden, that he could even make demands and even threatens. He goes there, he finds Trump, that Trump doesn't play such games. You know, and Trump puts Zelensky in his place. And in fact, started to lecture him. And tell him, you don't tell us what we need to do. We are the one to tell you what to do. You are not the one to tell us what we do. We are the one to tell you what you are supposed to do. So as if Ramaphosa has been following all this. And he decides, this is not South Africa's position. I know that we are facing an accusation that is somewhat to a certain extent an existential threat to us. It's of existential importance that we clear the air. So Ramaphosa composes himself and collects himself. And you see, it is his collective composure that stood as a pillar against all the odds of Trump's fury. Because Trump is pushing the narrative that South African white farmers are facing a genocide. Well, so, and there, apparently there are thousands of South African whites that have been killed. I found a debate yesterday online, and people were debating, and the person that was defending this issue, this narrative, was asked to provide proof. Provide any proof that there are white South Africans that are facing a genocide. Prove to everyone that it is a government policy to exterminate white South Africans. You see, and that gentleman was cornered, and he couldn't even have any leg to stand on. Now, Trump is saying that white South Africans are facing extermination, and no one is reporting about it. But Trump forgets that 400 people die every week or every day in Gaza. And if Trump does not understand what a genocide is, he must revisit his terminologies and ask his English advisors to explain to him what a genocide is. Because compared to South Africa, what is happening in Gaza is even beyond the word genocide. In fact, it was the American policy when they bombed Iraq. They killed 1 million Iraqis in the 2003 war. And in 1990, the Americans killed 600,000 Iraqis. So altogether is 1.6 million. Not even talking about how many people were killed in Vietnam and in the Korean War. In fact, the Korean War of the 1950s, Korea was hit to the point that the American Air Force did not have targets anymore left. There was nothing to be targeted. It was all cleared, gone, bombed to ashes. And how many millions are we talking about here? We are talking about almost 3 million deaths of civilians. Not even talking about what happened in Afghanistan. So when you are talking about genocides, the lecturers who are trying to lecture the world about morals are the ones that are responsible for millions of deaths in the world. And in fact, they continue to sponsor more deaths. Now, I don't want us to be so much anti-Israeli, because this is what we are able to do. We must also know that what Israel is doing today is exactly what the Arab did 1,400 years ago. And in fact, the Arabs have killed many people in the Middle East. Many Jews, many Persians, many people that didn't want to ascribe to Islamic faith were killed in cold blood. So we shouldn't forget that. And we shouldn't think that the Arabs now, because they are now at the mercy of Israel, they are innocent. You know, when the earth is full of blood, it is always easy for history to repeat itself in one way or the other. So that is, that is what is going on. Now, I know the issue of South Africa and the issue of land is very sensitive. And there are people in the world that it seems that they are untouchable. But if you look at South Africa, what is happening in South Africa is not criminality based on race. It's criminality based on crime. In fact, majority of the people that die in these criminal activities are blacks. They are not even white. Most people that die in South Africa in this crime or through this, by these crimes, are blacks. So Ramaphosa was trying to answer all the questions. And to the point that Trump didn't know what to say, except he said, I don't know what to say. So, because Ramaphosa, he demonstrated that when you have the truth, you don't need to be violent, because the truth stands as a pillar of defense. Trump has no truth, but Trump has a narrative. But then does not mean that what Trump is saying never happened. It happened. There were white people that were killed, white farmers that were killed. But that is part of crime. It's not because there is a group in South Africa that wants to kill white people. Now, but there is a problem here, because it seems that Julius Malema, that has a large following, and most of you can agree with me that you heard him right when he said, kill the Boer or kill the farmer. Now, this is a person with a large following. Whether what Malema is doing or is right or wrong, we don't know. But he has a large following. And this is where Trump stood on to say, why are you not arresting this person? Because this person, you are hearing him saying, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. Why not making him, why not charging him of inciting violence? Racial violence for that matter. So, but what is happening now, when we go back to history, there was a time in history where a black person was not counted as a full human being. And in fact, that is what the Germans came to do in Namibia or Southwest Africa, where they even literally almost exterminated the whole two tribes. And it was their policy. It was a policy of von Trotta and others. And you see, not even America, not even Trump, that is going back to say, Germany, you need to pay reparation for the genocide you committed in Namibia, because that was the first genocide of the 20th century. No one in this world has said that to Germany or stood up to Germany. And in fact, some Namibians were trying to pursue this in American courts, and they lost the case. Because no one in the world is interested in pursuing this case. Namibia is left on its own to pursue this on her own. And Namibia doesn't have might, you know, to force Germany to pay these reparations. So those were the atrocities committed, and everybody overlooked. So the politics of this world is that if you don't benefit in something, you tend to overlook it and it's not important. Because compared to the Jews, the Jewish, you know, Holocaust, it was the whole world that went on, and the Jews were supported and they got their payment, but not Namibians. So, and when it comes to, so now Ramaphosa, since, and if you want to know, to understand what I'm saying, just check, go back and listen to his intro speech when he introduced himself. That speech was a diplomatic speech. You know, it was a diplomatic speech, unlike Zelensky, demanding speech. And therefore, Trump has had no place to. He tried by all means to lecture, but he couldn't lecture because Ramaphosa did not give him that chance. So, but if you want to say, if you want to say what, I think when it comes to the 1,400 years of history, starting from 700 AD coming to, you know, to today, the most people that have suffered massive destruction and the attempt of extermination are the black race. And it is done in a multiple front. And in fact, some of the things that, some of the things even our own governments are making sure they are in place. I don't want to go deeper. But that's to make sure that the black race does not, you know, increase. But luckily, I don't know what is holding a black race. But when we talk now, Africa is a youngest continent. It has young people. It's the only continent that has a young population that is growing and very fast. And during COVID-19, a lot of Western media were pushing a narrative, making people to believe that Africans will die in millions of COVID-19. And they enthusiastically and sarcastically presented that and predicted that COVID-19 will kill mostly Africans. Like in most African countries, people will die of COVID-19. But little did they know that COVID-19, in fact, killed millions in Europe. In countries where, you know, in countries no one expected such to have had to, you know, such to have happened. And in fact, millions of people died in European countries. And another study revealed that you Africans were over vaccinated. Therefore, they had strong immune systems or immune capacity, however they put it in their medical terms. But that was a study that was revealed in the late 2020s. So when we talk about that period of 1,400 years up to today, the race that suffered extermination is a black race. From being slaved to being, you know, to being deliberate extermination. For example, no country in the world that held Argentina liable for what Faustinos Domingos did in the 18th century. Because Faustinos Domingos made it a policy that they want to exterminate black people. They didn't want any black person in their country. And that history, no one talks about it. I'm sure that some of you are just hearing it for the first time. The race that faced embarrassment over the period of 1,400, from 650 to 2025, is a black race. And that's a period of 1,400 years. So everybody wanted to make sure a black race is exterminated and reduced. It almost worked. Now, if you are debating with me, look at North Africa. Look at North Africa. North Africa was black. You have countries like Mauritania, and this other country, I think Mauritius is here, is in all those countries. Mauritania comes from the word Mauros, which means land of the black people. Now, if you go into Mauritania today, you will not find a black person. You find people with light skin Arab people. What happened to the black people? It's because the Arab exterminated the black people in Northern Africa. It was their policy. So they exterminated black people. They killed the black men and took the black women, made them pregnant, and those black women gave birth to better light-skinned children, and they killed the black women. And then that's why you see every person in the North Africa is almost Arabic, of Arabic descent. It was not because of the cultural intermarriages. No, it was because of a policy of extermination by the Arabs through the Islamic faith. So that's how terrible it is, and nobody's talking about it. And I'm sure Trump knows this well, very well. Every leader in America, every leader in Europe and in France, they know what we are talking about. They know this history very well. And nobody's talking about it because it does not fit the narrative of the agenda. So something needs to fit the agenda for it to catch the attention of the world. Something need to fit the agenda And what is that agenda? I'm not here to tell it to you. You find it out. So, now, when we look at the minority in South Africa, the Afrikaner whites are not even the minority. There are other minorities, like the Indian population, like people of Asian descent. They are the minorities. Because the Afrikaner white make up 7% of the population. And in fact, they are the most privileged people because they own 70%, 70 to 85% of arable land and productive land. They are the ones that owns they run the economy. So, to say that they are facing a genocide and they are facing existential threat in South Africa is not true. It's a joke. In fact, that's a joke. And some people are even saying that the 49 Afrikaners that went to America as refugees under that refugee status that was granted to them are not even farmers. In fact, most real Afrikaner farmers are not even buying into the issue of going to South Africa. Because it is something else to go to another country and another thing to belong to that country. And most sensible Afrikaners understand this very well. They say, look, us going to America, leaving South Africa, is a cultural existential threat to us. That is going to be a cultural genocide. And most of you say Afrikaners must go back to their country. They are not, Afrikaners don't have any other country. The Afrikaners were born here in Africa. That's why they are called Afrikaners. They were born here in Africa. Of course, they are of Dutch, French, Malay, and English, Portuguese descent. But that was 400 years ago. In fact, if we are saying everyone must go back where they were born, we know that every Bantu-speaking tribe was not born here. So we know that we were not born here. So if we are to say everyone must go back where they are coming from, some of us will find ourselves going back to Canaan, because that's where we are coming from. But that was 4,000 years ago. That was 4,000 to 3,000 years ago when we migrated from Canaan into Kush, into what we call Kush, which is called Ethiopia today. And from Ethiopia, of course, we spread across. And most of us don't want to understand that. We think apparently, a human being started in Botswana and then went to Europe and it became a, all those are narratives that are meant to distort the real history. Because we as Africans are even proud of saying apparently Africa is the cradle of mankind. Which sounds very good. But that's a mockery. Because Africa started as a humanoid. You know, not really human, but trying to be, you know. And then something attempted to cross the sea and voila, went into Europe. And then immediately became white, upright, very wise. And that's why now this being is the one that is lecturing everyone because he's a full Homo sapiens sapien. Nonsense. There's no such a history. There is no such a history. That is a history made up by Darwin. And most of us don't know what Darwin was pushing. The history of evolution, that's why Darwin was never excommunicated from the Catholic Church. Because Darwin is from the Roman Catholic Church. For most of you that don't know. Now, Darwin came with this idea because for centuries the Pope, the papacy, and the emperors of Rome were trying to use the Bible to control people, but they couldn't because there was no scripture that was in line with their agenda. Because all scripture in the Bible says everyone is equal. And they needed something that gives them an upper hand to say a white man is more proud, is much of prowess than any other race. And that is not even in the Bible. It's not in the canonized, not in the non-canonized. In fact, if you look at the Bible mostly, most of the areas written in the Bible are mostly black areas. You see? A white race was this tiny corner concentrated in Tarshish. Very small place that was just concentrated in Tarshish, which is Spain or Britain today, depending on how you look at your map or how you align your map. Now, when you are talking about Nineveh, we are talking about Jerusalem, we are talking about Jericho, all these places mostly were inhabited by black people. When you are talking about the Assyrians, when you are talking about the Babylonians, when you are talking about the Persians, the Medes, the Chaldeans, the Arameans, all these are black. Of course, not dark like us, but they are not white. And this is the same thing that deceived the Arabs to think that they are, just because they are a bit light-skinned, they are better than any other, so they have the right to exterminate anyone else. It's a deception. So Tarshish was a very small corner, very tiny corner, and up to now, the whole white group in the world is a very small corner, just a corner of 800 million people. Very small. Very, very small. But this is a group of people that think they are gods. So, in 1453, around there, the Pope by that time was Nicholas V. And he came up with a concept that drove the whole world crazy. That doctrine of discovery. That they must go and discover places because the Pope was tired. You know, this tiny corner of white people was a very toxic tiny corner for almost 2,000 years. They've been fighting each other, fighting wars, fighting almost everyone. The Germanic tribes were fighting everyone. In fact, the only better, smaller corner was the corner of the Vikings. That, according to some history, it is the people from the Nordic areas that came to the Western Europe and say, hey, stop fighting. what you are doing, you are hurting another human being. So, they were fighting everyone. So, now the Pope was getting tired because Europe, they have eaten all their lions. Eaten up even in fact, they have eaten up everything that moves. They had nothing left. And it is the Pope that told the world is wide. Go and discover. Whosoever is not a Roman Catholic and is not white, you are able to take whatever belongs to them. So whatever belongs to them is yours. And that's how he got rid of chaos in Europe, at least for the time being. But since Europe is used to chaos and to chaotic toxicity, wars continue even beyond that seemingly great idea. So war continued in the 15th centuries, in the 16th, the 17th, the 18th, there was a war. There were wars, in fact. And in 1804, after Europe had fought a war, and they made a treaty of great empires, they were faced with a problem of Germany, because Germany was just made up of tiny little states. And the unification of Germany was a terrible thorn in the flesh to the then European powers. Okay, that's another history for another topic for another day. But I just want to give you the overview that what is happening today did not start today. It, in fact, stretches a period of 1,400 years. So, now, this audacity in our brothers, the Europeans, of thinking that they are the gods, could not really develop roots until the appearance of Darwin and the introductions of his teachings and beliefs. Because, look, using the Bible to conquer was problematic in itself, because the Bible does not grant Europe the power to conquer anyone. Because Europe is not written in the Bible as a conqueror. In fact, Europe is written in the Bible as a beast. So, this was problematic to the Pope and to the Roman Catholic Church by then, because they wanted to use this book to subjugate everyone, and it did not work. And this is what your politicians don't understand. They tell you the Bible was used to colonize. But when you ask them how, they will not explain. They only use that phrase. They cannot explain the how. So, to the point that Leopold the 16th wrote to the missionaries that were coming into the Congo to say, look, there is nothing in that book you can teach an African, you can teach a black person. There is nothing you can teach a black person about God. Not don't kill, don't steal. They know those things. It's part of their existence. And you missionaries don't even think that you are there to preach the gospel. What gospel? You are there for the agenda, not for the gospel. And you see, some missionaries refused. Nobody tells you this history. Some missionaries refused that, no, we came to preach the gospel. We are not going to be part of the agenda of the government. And you know what? Those missionaries were sanctioned, and most of them were killed. and even to some point that the Roman Catholic Church itself refused to follow the orders of the government of the day, and it was removed from the government subsidies. Those are documented history, events, historical events. So, but the doctrine of discovery gave the Europeans power to go and conquer lands and take ownership of land that doesn't belong to them just because they are white. Now, and that's where it was born to say the children of God are white. But history over 5,000 years ago, the history that stretched over 5,000 years ago, the people that walked with God are black. Most the people that walked with God from Abel to Seth to whoever, to Noah to whoever, those are black people. And in fact, that's why when you look at the beginning of the world, where the world starts, it starts between Tigris and Euphrates. It does not start between the Pacific and the Holy Sea. No. It does not start. If you go to Basra and you do archaeology, in fact, most of your Bantu languages are coming from there. Most of your Bantu speaking tribes are coming from Iraq. And in fact, the people, the native inhabitants of Iraq were black people. That's why it was called Shina, in the plain of Shina, the plains of Shina. There were two black guys that came from Shina who came and established the most economically vibrant Sodom and Gomorrah. So, but Darwin came to say, no, there is no creation. Because creation is a problem. If you go by creation will tell you that all human beings are equal and they are the image of God. And the Catholic Church didn't want that. Because they wanted to conquer, since the Pope was tired of chaos in Europe. So, they wanted peace in Europe so that people can go anywhere else and just go and fight wars somewhere else. And that's why they have to create a narrative that will encourage that whosoever will go and will start voyages, we are going to fund it. Because the Pope was tired. The Catholic Church, main Catholic Church, was tired of war in Europe. So Darwin has to change the narrative to say there is no creation. We were all apes. And then we started in Africa. One ape or two managed to cross the sea. They came to Europe and they developed. They became Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Homo sapiens sapiens. That's why they are sapiens sapiens. So any other person that is not European, is not white, is not a Homo sapien. That's how this narrative of evolution was interpreted. And that's why in the 19th century, the Germans, when they were killing people in Namibia, they took the skulls to Germany to go and investigate and find out if the brains of a white or a black person can be the same with the brain of a black person, or a black person and white, if they have the same brain capacity. That was the basis of the research. It was not done because of creation. It was done because of evolution. Because evolution is the one that came to finally be the nail in the coffin. In fact, powering that doctrine of discovery, that is now not going to be on creation. Because creation says everyone is equal before God. Whether you are white or you are black, you are equal. And creation doesn't say God is white or black. Or Bible doesn't say that. Bible just say everyone is a, all people belong to God. Black or white. And in fact, in the Bible, there is no such a thing like a black or a white person. In the Bible, there is people. Whether they are pagans or people of God, they are all people. So, and fast forward to here. A lot of things are happening to blacks in Africa. No one rebuked France for subjugating Niger, Mali, and the 14 former French colonies that are paying $600 billion is leaving Africa into France's coffers every year. Not even Trump is calling Macron to book to say what you are doing is an economic genocide. Mm-mm. No one has done that. So when an African country rises up and want to align itself with a different alignment for their benefit, this is called rebellion. It is called dictatorship. It is called authoritarianism. It is given all names that it is the death of democracy. Now, it means that democracy is what feeds Europe at the expense of any other country. And you see, that's why the Chinese, the Russians, the Koreans, the Iranians are labeled as authoritarian countries, dictatorship countries, because they refused to feed France and the rest of the European so-called Homo sapiens. Because they refused to dance to the music of these scientific scientifically modified these terminologies of Homo sapiens. The Europeans are the Homo sapiens. The rest of us are either Homo habilis or Homo erectus. That's how they look at us. And that's why when they call for a summit, Africa-Europe summit, they call the summit there to go and lecture African leaders. They do not look at African leaders as equals. They look at them as pupils. You know? They look at them as learners, as class of pupils. That they call an African summit, France-Africa summit, so that Macron can go and lecture Africans on what he himself is not even able to do. So this is the same. Ramaphosa goes to United States and he introduces himself not as a lecturer, but as a diplomat. And therefore, Trump doesn't have enough time or enough chance to in fact lecture Ramaphosa. Because Ramaphosa did not give him chance to lecture him. The answer that Ramaphosa gave was, look, we have a constitution. And we are governed by the law, the principles of law. Of constitutional laws. Therefore, Malema is a minority party, which under the constitution is granted the right to exist. And in fact, whatever he's saying it in the framework of that right. And Trump did not dispute that. It was spoken right in his face that. But Trump hit back to say, look, this person has a following. When you look at the following of Julius Malema, it's in the hundreds of thousands. Which means this person has some power, has some influence. So you were supposed to arrest him for inciting violence, and in fact, racial violence. Whether you agree with Trump or not, what Malema was doing was exactly that. It was racial. He was inciting racial violence when he was saying, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, shoot to kill, something like that. So that was an incitation, if there's such a word, of violence. And needed at least a rebuke from the government. But the Ramaphosa said, look, you can only, I'm just paraphrasing, you can only say this is a South African issue if South Africa as a government has a policy in such line. If South Africa has a policy against the white people, then you are free to say it's a South African issue. And Trump could not say anything. Ramaphosa went on by saying, look, I came with a composition. These people would not have been here if that was happening in South Africa. This is my Minister of Agriculture, which I believe is a leader of the DA party, if I'm not mistaken. He's a Minister of Agriculture. So he came with all the white, with the white guys to South Africa. He went with them. So if there was a genocide in South Africa, or there was such a violence against black and white in South Africa that it is official, that would not have happened. And Trump, for the first time, is quiet. In fact, now, while that conversation was going on, the guy from NBC embarrasses himself by asking a question that is not in line with the subject at hand. He was given a good chance. He was asking a question, yeah, no, you got an Air Force aircraft, a gift from a jet from the Qataris. What is the significance of that jet? And hey, Trump's fury turned to him and he started calling him a jack. So, and like I said in the beginning, journalists, we make a fool of ourselves sometimes. I don't know what we want to achieve. We sometimes make a fool of ourselves. That was a good opportunity to ask very relevant questions. You know, in my view, I would have thought this guy was supposed to ask to say, look, there are other people around the world that are facing problems. Why do you only choose Afrikaner white in South African white to grant them refugee status when there are people that are fleeing their countries and you are turning them away? What is so special about these guys? That was supposed to be the question that this guy from NBC was supposed to ask. Well, it's not our NBC here. It's NBC in America. So he made a fool of himself. And I'm sure that all the eyes were now on this guy, on this poor guy. Whether that was the question that was given to him by his editors, we don't know. But he made a fool of himself, really. And that was an international blunder. It was not even a local blunder. You know what, the example that I gave to you, that there was a journalist, a lady journalist that asked about abortion when the people were making a press conference on fish rot. And she also made a fool of herself. Because the president tended to bombard her almost 20 minutes. Just lecturing her. So, but that was on our side was a local blunder. You know? But this one was international, was global. It was an intercontinental embarrassment. It was a universal embarrassment. In fact, that this guy saved Ramaphosa big time, because Trump's attention was now on this guy. So you need to ask relevant questions. Don't act like this jerk that is coming from NBC that he does not know what he's doing. We are even investigating your bosses. So those kind of things. You are even putting your bosses into question. So that's how we make a fool of ourselves as journalists. You know, of trying to think that we know it all. There's a little mentality in journalists of thinking that they know it all. And sometimes that is very detrimental. Right, so let's go for a short musical break. And we will continue. It's 21 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. I just want to give you reality. And you see, Realm of the Hysterics is not like any other show. Here we discuss things, we speak the language as it is. Within the framework, of course, of ethics and moral. We have morals and principles and ethics that we follow. But we analyze issues and we lay them down as they are. So we have to go for a short musical break and we'll be right back to continue. Dunia yetu samburera Right, we continue. It's 29 minutes to the hour of 1 o'clock. And we are still here. If you want to be part of the conversation, the number in studio is 083-288-401. That's a number you can use to come through if you have something to say. So, there are things we want to talk about, even as black people. At the same time, black people present themselves as the most holy people and that they are always the victims of what has happened in the past. Like I said, whatever happened is an outstretch of 1,400 year period. So, but in that 1,400 year period, there are also many atrocities that were committed by black people to other black people. And those atrocities will not be mentioned because as black people we were pushing a narrative of saying that we were found very holy in our place, in our land. We were peaceful, and somebody taught us how to fight. which is not true. No, in as much as we are the victims of what happened, yes, when it comes to colonialism and so forth. But there are other black tribes that are victims of our tribes. You know, they are victims of what our tribes have done. In fact, there are languages that have gone extinct in Africa because of the subjugation of those tribes to major tribes. So just like when you listen to people say, we are coming from the Adamawa floodplains, the Great Lakes, that's where we are coming from. It sounds exciting that we are coming from there. But they will never tell you why did we come from there. What happened? No one will talk about it because it doesn't fit the narrative. We also have a narrative. We also have a narrative. It's not only white people that have a narrative. We too have a narrative. And our narrative is to remain as victims. We have a narrative that we want to push all the time and want to seem that we are victims. And we are victims. We are the holy people that were provoked into whatever we find ourselves. It's not entirely. In fact, if you look at Angola, for example. In the 14th century, the Angolan queen or king came to the point of arrivation. You know? Where him and the Pope were even exchanging letters. So they were exchanging letters. Now, if you look at the Angolan people, I don't mean any offense, but let me just speak the truth. If you look at the Angolan people, the Cape Verdean, the Mozambicans, the Guineans, and see, you look at the Cameroonians, you look at all these countries that were colonized by France and Portugal, they have the same mentality. And most of the people in these countries don't even speak their languages anymore. They have assimilated into French culture. You know, they speak French throughout. Because they created a narrative which was that if you don't speak Portuguese, especially in Angola, you are a primitive, backward person. I used to know how they used to say it in Portuguese. That I am poor because I don't speak Portuguese. Yeah, I think I will remember it. So the narrative was that if you don't speak Portuguese, you are a poor person. If you go into Luanda, Benguela, all these areas, you never find a person that can speak properly. They can speak their language very well. Mostly, they speak Portuguese and they make sure they speak it well. Even they speak it better than the Portuguese natives themselves. And now you go to Cameroon and other countries, they don't even speak their language. They speak Portuguese. I mean, they speak French. so that they are able, for you to be able to go to France, you must be able to speak French. For you to be able to go to Portugal, you must be able to speak Portuguese. It is fine if you don't speak your native language. Native language is not important. If you go there and say Machiri, somebody will look at you and say, who is this? These are village people, maybe. And then he will ask you, você fala português? Yeah. Well, fala português. So you'll be forced to break Portuguese and you'll be laughed at because you are backward and very primitive. Most of our brothers in Angola, that's what they think. They think Portuguese is, you know, is civilization. And most of our brothers in Congo, in all these countries, they think French is civilization. That's what they think. So whether that is being brainwashed or brain dried, we don't know. But something happened for somebody to come to that level, thinking that, you know, there was a time where my Silozi was going down. And I made it a policy to say, okay, whenever I pray, I must pray in Silozi. Because I didn't want to lose the language. And in fact, I tried by all means that every language that I speak, I tried by all means to speak it well. I don't really care about English, because English is not my mother tongue. I speak it for official communication purposes, and that's it. But the native languages that I speak, I make sure that I speak them very well. You see, to the point that I can speak Oshiwambo better than the natives themselves. That's my attempt. Because to me, I believe that if I don't speak my mother tongue, my mother language, I'm backward. I've gone back. That's what I believe. Yeah, but there are circumstances where we have children today that they are not able to speak English, to speak Oshiwambo very well and the other languages very well because of the the coexistence. The children are playing with others in the street, and the only language they can communicate better with everyone is English. So that one is not a deliberate act. It's a world that we live in. You see that the children understand the language, but they can't speak it. They understand. Because at home they speak that language. Somebody speaks to them in that language. But then when they are in the street or at school, they mix with Damara, Herero, Oshiwambo, Kabango, and so forth, then there is no lingua franca that is created to accommodate everyone. So the only language that is used is English. Now, in those days, we had, Silozi as a lingua franca. All of us can understand, can at least somebody speak Silozi, as everyone from Zambezi can understand, can speak. Yeah, but their mother tongue, the Yei, the Fwe, the Subia, those ones, in fact, majority of the people will speak Subia. It's like the Oshiwambo of. Yeah. But most of our brothers from other countries, they don't speak their language. They're not like, at least our brothers from East Africa. Those are good people. They've created the lingua franca. That is Kiswahili, spoken by 300 million people, and everybody speaks it. Doesn't belong to anyone. So, yes.
Good morning, Dr. Nyengera.
Morning.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine. Me, I don't want to get lost, though. So I follow the lecture, the presentation, but I know I don't want to get lost. So maybe for me it's good I come in quickly, and then so that I don't forget what I really want to say in relation to your topic. Yeah, so can I go ahead?
Go ahead.
Okay. So thank you very much for the opportunity. Yeah, I know and I've heard President Ramaphosa being criticized so heavily here in Namibia. But when I listen to the news and I look at him, the screen, when he visited President Trump, and in South Africa, people are congratulating him, congratulating him for a good job well done. And then when I listen to him, and I understand that President Trump was convinced that the constitutional principles, the rule of law, it's very important there. It's observed in South Africa, just like what you said that you were told that we are guided. Their conducts are guided by the constitutional principles, the rule of law, and I really support that. And like you said, why is it that it's only one category of people who are granted that status? And it's very, very important to understand that the Afrikaners, when I was leading at one point, how they came out with this University of Pretoria, if I'm not mistaken, it was actually established based on those Afrikaners in their reach, their wealth, and things like that. So now maybe it's through violence. In every society, you see those kind of incidences, and they are not tolerated. And I'm sure the law doesn't even permit those unlawful conduct. So now, President Ramaphosa, could really stand on that ground, and we, many of us, there was even a program that I was listening, and they are so criticized, not that this positive and constructive criticism, but that one is something that can really discourage a leader, and also somehow it's even confused. So the black, in conclusion for me, there, the black people, we have said it there, exterminated or whatever. So just to wipe them out from the earth, and this is what we are seeing, the reflection in Israel there, in Palestine, Gaza, and all those things, the atrocity. And those are the constitutional principles that are being violated, international law. And I think I'm not so sure where the stand of President Trump now regarding that issue. But South Africa and Namibia and many other countries, they have demonstrated their commitment to adhere to those the national principles, the values which are being violated. So it's just like our people. I was listening to the IEM graduation lesson 3, and Dr. Namwandi, Professor Namwandi, is a professor or doctor. I think they deserve those titles. You are saying you graduate here, and then you run to Europe and America. What does that mean? And some of them are there looking for refugee status. Did you not hear recently how our people were, So let's see how we can have a united front And then so that we can look at ourselves, become more patriotic enough, and defend the sovereignty of our country, the Africa. Now that one is very disturbing. Thank God for Lama with the wisdom. And you know, I regard him very much as a very important ballast. So at least he could not bow down. And I know our leaders were precise when they got into the bus. And then, you know, all these things, maybe for security reasons, I understand. But if you just to get in the bus, organized, what's wrong with that? Does it really diminish my leadership? Or what the contribution that I can make? Trump is doing very well because he wants to bring global peace and order. So maybe where he is now... So, France, let me just end up here. All I'm saying is that we need also to look at our historical background. That Black were not given any, whether it's legal or economic or whatever status here that was recognized. So if you read an article by Advocate Namanji on Friday's newspaper, Namibian, you see how the kind of system and the laws and all these things, just like the way you are saying it. So thank you very much. We need to revisit those kind of history, as we are happy we are hearing these things for the first time, some of us. But as we contextualize these things, let's support our leaders who are there to defend the sovereignty and the independence of Africa.
Thank you very much, Uncle Bona.
Welcome.
All right. So like I said, Africans are not entirely innocent. They also participated in the atrocities against other African tribes. Now, I was saying that in the 14th century, the Angolan king was even at the point where they were sending each other letters with the Pope. I think this is the same Pope that, you know, was behind this doctrine of discovery. So when they started the sale of slavery, the Angolan kingdoms were involved in the sale of slaveries. Sorry, of the sale of slaves. The Angolan kingdoms were involved in selling others, you know. And we know by at the history that what they were given in exchange of a human slave. So it's not that white people came here and grabbed people and forced them into the sea, into the ocean. No, a lot of black people were sold by other black people. And in fact, slavery came to end not because the British were in solidarity of the black slaves that were sold. It's just because Britain was losing economically to America, because America was becoming an economic power and threatening Britain. That's why Britain ended slavery. It's not because they repented and they became good Christians. No, they ended slavery because the Americans were now becoming an industrialized country thanks to cheap labor, and the British industries were suffering. They couldn't compete with the Americans, with America's rising industries. And that's why they ended up calling off slavery. So when you hear, no, we ended slavery, you ended it because you were losing. You were reacting to the, it was an economic reaction. It was not because of a remorse or that maybe what was happening was bad thing. No, it was an economic reaction. It ended because it's an economic reaction.
Dr. Franz.
Yes.
How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
You are listening to us from where?
Yeah, through the air.
Okay.
I wanted to say something. I want to say something on Ramaphosa visit to the White House.
Yes.
You know what? I personally don't like the way Trump speaks to African leaders, or the way he was speaking to Ramaphosa.
No, Trump doesn't speak to African leaders only like that. At least the one thing I like of Trump is that he does not discriminate who he talks to.
Yeah.
He talks to the Europeans the same. In fact, with Ramaphosa, it was even softer.
Yeah, I think that's just the way he is. But somehow, I think Ramaphosa really controlled the situation. He tried to avoid what happened between Trump and Zelensky. And I think that somehow he did well. However, I think also Ramaphosa's visit was not well planned. Even for him to go with John Steenhuisen, I think they were not on the same page. And that was one of the things that made it hard also for them to settle.
No, look, the mentality of most of our Afrikaner brothers is that you will never be at the same page with them.
Yeah.
And it's not just about blacks. They are just difficult even to other white people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just their understanding of how they view themselves.
Yeah,
which is totally different from any other person.
Yeah, that's how they have been. If you go through history, even during the 1915, that time, yeah. But also, Trump, for him to use Julius Malema's videos and Jacob Zuma, yeah, it's also not really fair, because there are a lot of things that are happening in America. If you look in South Africa, they say South Africa is one of the countries that have a high crime rate with the USA. Because we've seen, it's like 11, in 11 minutes you have 7 people dying, 130 people dying per day in America. And yet, Trump, the way he's speaking as if there is nothing happening in America.
Yeah, but why? In America, there is no one who is chanting, kill the blacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is that, you know, both Zuma and Malema, these people have a following.
Kill the boy.
So whatever they say will really make impact. They have millions of people that are following them. So if you make such a statement and you have a followership, you are making it a policy that it is your policy.
Yeah.
So that's where Trump is standing to say, look, this person is inciting racial violence.
Yeah, but the other thing, blacks are not happy in America. Blacks are forever being killed in the streets. White police are killing blacks in the streets. They are mistreating blacks. And what are they doing? Nothing. Also, there are videos. Or let me say, even Trump himself, he also made threats. When he was threatening North Korea, those are also threats. If you are telling people that you have big weapons and you are accurate, what are you doing? Threatening. Only that your time is up.
Yeah.
I don't want to, yeah.
Okay, no, we can meet again next Sunday.
Okay,
bye. Okay. Right, guys, the issue here is that whether Trump is wrong or right, we also know that Zuma and Malema are making public statements that are reckless. You know, and they have a potential to incite big time violence, and things can escalate out of hand and create a civil war. So those are very reckless statements to say kill the Boer, shoot the, those are reckless statements. And we know that we are sitting with with the Rwanda issue, that one reckless person made the statement in the radio, and we have 800,000 people dead right now in Rwanda. So we know that what happened where the whites came and took land by force. That must be solved by government with all its ordinances, but not in the street by reckless, chantings. So those are very much reckless chantings. No two ways about that one. They are very irresponsible, statements made by people with influence. Ladies and gentlemen, we are landing, and I would wish you a great day ahead. Continue to listen to Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station, and from me, Francis Nengera, the only reliable kinetic energy in town, I would say it's a goodbye from me.